United States v. Benzing. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the Court, my name is Chris Kelly and I represent Walter Benzing in this sentencing appeal. Mr. Benzing was prosecuted for, at different times, for different crimes that were part of an overall course of conduct. He was sentenced to 21 months in prison on the first crime, which involved some fraudulent timber contracts and a loss of about $75,000. After he finished that sentence, he was prosecuted for the remaining crimes in that overall course of conduct, which had, again, involved fraudulent timber contracts and had an intended loss of about $1.9 million.
As I understand the chronology, what you just referred to as the remaining crimes or crime,
yes,
occurred within days of his sentencing on the prior fraud. Is that right? And before he commenced service of this earlier sentence?
Well, the course of conduct ended shortly prior to his sentencing on the first
crime. The actual act of mail fraud occurred a couple of days after he was,
yes,
sentenced.
Or a couple of days before, but yeah, within a few days of sentencing, yes.
Doesn't that foreclose your argument under subsection A of the guideline that you're arguing here requires him to be given credit? Your argument is that he's supposed to get credit for the prior 19 months that he served on the first mail fraud conviction.
I'm arguing that he should receive credit.
He should receive credit.
Not that he's necessarily required to receive it. But
right, under the 5G1.3.
Correct.
But subsection A of that guideline specifically precludes even the possibility of credit under these circumstances. The sentence is required to be run consecutive, isn't it?
Well, I think subsection A is talking about a defendant who has an undischarged term.
That's this case?
No, because it's not, because he had finished his sentence.
At the time he committed the crime. He hadn't started serving the sentence.
Well, this sentence would necessarily be a consecutive sentence because, I guess it wouldn't technically be consecutive because he already finished the first sentence. But I don't think the issue here is should the sentence itself be consecutive or concurrent, but should he receive credit for the fact that he has already been given a 21-month sentence for a portion of the overall scheme.
Well, you're asking for a sentence that by application of this subsection A of the guideline in question is required to run consecutively to be functionally concurrent. I mean, that's what I understand your argument to be. You're asking for a functionally concurrent sentence when the guideline in question, subsection A, says it must be consecutive. I guess I can't wrap my mind around that.
I think the...
Have I characterized your argument correctly, first of all?
You've characterized my argument correctly that I think the court was required to consider, at least, giving Mr. Benzing credit for the 21 months that had already been imposed and that he had finished serving for the same course of conduct, or a portion of that same course of conduct. I don't think that subsection A precludes that. I think subsection A is talking about how the court handles the sentence in terms of consecutive versus concurrent. But I think that the overall policy that is reflected in 5G 1.3 and in the commentary that's in Note 4 and that's discussed in the Huidi decision and that this court discusses in the Blackwell decision all come out at the same place. And that place is that in order to avoid sentencing disparity, we shouldn't have one person serving a longer overall sentence simply because he's prosecuted or he's sentenced for an entire course of conduct in the same sentencing proceeding, as opposed to somebody else who is being sentenced for part of the course of conduct in one sentencing proceeding and being sentenced for another part of it in a different sentencing proceeding.
The decision whether to take into consideration and credit the time served on the earlier offense that is being considered as relevant conduct is discretionary in the district court?
Of course, yeah.
And Judge Crabb, I think this was Judge Crabb, wasn't it?
It was.
Judge Crabb considered your argument and rejected it?
I don't know. She didn't address it.
I thought she did. Didn't
she didn't.
Talk about it being a close call? Words to that effect?
That was with regard to whether, in fact, the first set of crimes were relevant conduct. She agreed with the government's position and with my position that the crime for which Mr. Benzing served his 21-month sentence was relevant conduct to the crimes that he was being sentenced for in the second sentencing proceeding.
So it comes off of the criminal history calculation and goes on to the offense severity calculation.
That's correct. So she agreed with that position, which was contrary to what the pre-sentence report was recommending. But she didn't go beyond that to the next step of our argument, which was, if this is relevant conduct, you should give him credit for that 21-month sentence because it's part of the overall scheme.
Well, didn't
that
you talk about not
for?
Wanting to reward him for committing this crime while he was being prosecuted for the earlier crime and that sort of thing?
She talked about the
Isn't
reasons.
Isn't that an implicit rejection of your argument?
I didn't see it that way. I mean, she certainly didn't say in court, I understand the policies that you're addressing. I understand what the Witte decision says and what the Blackwell decision says, and I understand 5G 1.3, but I'm not going to apply those policies in this case for these reasons. That kind of analysis just doesn't appear in her sentencing decision. So whether she considered it or not, I don't know. She may have considered it in her own mind, but she certainly didn't articulate it. In this case, this court has no way to review an exercise of discretion if the sentencing court doesn't place her reasoning on the record.
Did Judge Cramp have the earlier case? Was she the sentencing judge?
I believe so.
So she had a history with your client?
Yes.
Which supports a conclusion on our part that she likely implicitly rejected your argument. Judges don't like repeat customers.
I'm very uncomfortable with an appellate court saying that a judge has implicitly done something when the judge hasn't addressed it. It seems to me that this court, as well as the Supreme Court, as well as the Sentencing Commission, have articulated sentencing rules that cover this particular situation. And when a sentencing court makes no reference whatsoever to those sentencing rules, I'm very uncomfortable saying, well, you know, she probably knew what the law was and she probably applied it correctly, and maybe that's implicit in saying bad things about Mr. Benzing. But if the court doesn't address it expressly and doesn't tell us what her process of reasoning was, then we're really just guessing. We're hoping maybe that she considered it and understood the law and applied the law correctly, but there's nothing on the record that tells us that she did, and that's what's essential to appellate review of a discretionary decision, and it just doesn't appear on the record here.
Now, this is the same individual who was convicted and waiting to be sentenced, and during the time that he was waiting to be sentenced, he was convicted of another crime doing the same thing. Rather, he was found to be participating in it. Is that right?
He was found to have been participating.
Right. Now, you think that they should give him a wholesale price. A bargain counter price.
I'm saying that if his first sentencing had been postponed, and if he had been sentenced for the entire scheme all at once,
well, I know what you're
in
saying.
A combined sentencing hearing,
do you have any
have
case law to back that up with a factual situation as we have here?
I have not found a case that is precisely on point.
I don't think you will either.
And certainly the principles.
It's a good idea, but it doesn't sell.
I think the principles that are addressed in the Witte decision and in the Blackwell decision from this court are essentially the same principles, as well as the other cases that talk about grouping that I cited in my brief. I think they all come back to the same principle.
But here on the other hand, here's an individual who's been convicted of the first crime, and he's waiting to be sentenced. And he's saying to the court, you go to hell, I'm going to continue this as long as I can. And so he goes out and he does it over again.
I think if
and he should get credit on the second one.
I'm saying that the sentencing court at least has an obligation to consider and apply these sentencing rules. Now, the court may say, in the exercise of my discretion, I think that Mr. Benzing's conduct in continuing to engage in criminal behavior while awaiting sentencing, outweighs the sentencing rules, and he shouldn't get credit.
Well, if it's apparent that the judge would do that, there's no purpose in a remand.
I don't think it's at all apparent that the judge would do that, because I think the sentencing policies that are articulated in the guidelines and in Witte and in Blackwell urge the court not to do that.
Why?
Because there should not be... Because there should not be sentencing disparities.
Your response to Judge Coffey is to smile.
I'm sorry?
Your only response to Judge Coffey is to smile.
No, my response to Judge...
You know perfectly well what Judge Crabb would do in a resentence.
I don't know what Judge Crabb would do. I cannot read her mind.
You don't have any good argument for why she should exercise lenity.
My good argument is that the Witte decision, the Blackwell decision, the other decision cited in my brief, and the sentencing guidelines all urge her to give credit in this situation for time that is already served for relevant conduct. And those sentencing rules are well-defined and were not applied by Judge Crabb here, and I don't know if they were considered or understood by Judge Crabb because she made no reference to them, even though they were discussed prior to sentencing and at sentencing.
Pretty experienced, though.
She's a very talented woman and a very talented judge and has a fine record. You can rest assured that she knew what she was doing.
Your Honor, there would be no appellate review of discretionary decisions if we could just say judges are good and we're assured that they know what they're doing.
Review of discretionary judgments is deferential. You don't strain to reverse and have countless futile resentences. But thank you, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Elke?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Elke, and I represent the United States. I was counsel below. I was also counsel on Mr. Benzing's prior case. I'd like to just first answer a few questions that Judge Sykes had put to Mr. Kelly. The offense conduct, the mailing in this case, the scheme went from September through December, but the actual count of conviction, or the one count, was 3 days after sentencing. Sentencing was on December 21st of 2001, and the mailing was on December 24th, 3 days later. The whole scheme was going on that fall while Mr. Benzing was out on pretrial release on the first indictment. I should also say, it's mentioned in the brief, but just so it's clear, neither the district court, of course, nor our office knew of that conduct during that whole fall. And indeed, I couldn't give you a precise date, but it was a long period of time after that this all came to light, more than a year or so, I believe. And then counsel and the government were negotiating back and forth. So that accounts for the time delay here. That's why the second case didn't come up until later. It wasn't like people were sitting there waiting to charge this case, knowing what had happened. That is not at all the case, and that's in our brief. But I just wanted that to be extra clear for everybody.
Well, and those two points, don't they take this case outside of the policy that underlines this whole guidelines application?
Maybe I should have argued it more strenuously, but, Your Honor, you were asking about 5G1.3, I believe, and doesn't that just kill this whole argument? And post-Booker, the guidelines, I understand their advisory, but if I might be just talk about the guidelines as if, you know, they're downward departures and that kind of language. I was always going forward under 5K2.23, which applies when there's clearly a discharged sentence and so on. And so that's what we were looking at in terms of the argument both in the PSI and in sentencing memorandum submitted by defense counsel and in our submissions to the district court. So that was the guideline that was sort of being discussed. Essentially here, Mr. Benzing wants credit for the repetitive nature of his crimes, but that's exactly the reason Judge Crabb explicitly at sentencing and in the statement of reasons says that she's concerned about his conduct, the repetitive nature of it. She also mentions the fact that he's done well since he's been released from prison and so on. But precisely the reason he's asking for credit here is the reason she's saying, no, I'm concerned about you. The only thing Judge Crabb didn't do was specifically say, and therefore I reject your motion. But it was clear what she was getting at by the fact that it had been briefed by everybody, it was discussed by Mr. Kelly and by myself at sentencing, and then she goes right into her decision. So I think the record is clear that Judge Crabb does know about the argument. She's specifically rejecting it. She just doesn't add the therefore clause onto it. But I think that the record makes clear that she would have understood it and did understand it, and it is a reasonable sentence near the bottom of the applicable guideline range. The only other final thing I would say, because there's sort of this implicit argument, or explicit maybe, that he's being doubly penalized because this conduct came during the same time and there was a subsequent prosecution. But no one knows what Judge Crabb would have done if she had found out 3 days before sentencing that Mr. Benzing is continuing to engage in this conduct. I think we can say with some high degree of certainty that he wouldn't have gotten acceptance of responsibility in the first case, so he would have had a 3-point bump there. And also, given that the guidelines were advisory, Judge Crabb may very well have gone up because he would have been basically thumbing his nose at the court at that time. No one knows. So to say what would have happened in the prior case is just speculation. Government believes the sentence in this case was reasonable given the loss amount. It was within the guideline range. Unless there are any questions, that's all I have to say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Elke and Mr. Kelly. You were appointed, were you not? We thank you for your efforts on behalf.